Going beyond the headlines to the deeper issues. 96.3 WHUR and HUR Voices, Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Insight Segment, where your questions and comments matter at 202-319-7810. Join the conversation.
Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Insight Segment. I'm Harold Fisher. Are African Americans being treated differently as they seek licenses for medical marijuana businesses in Maryland? That's the question being asked by the Maryland Legislative Black Caucus and black entrepreneurs in the state. And joining me tonight to talk about this are Bruce Branch, spokesman for the African American Cannabis Association, and Lisa Ellis, CEO of Ellis Industries. Her application for a license was denied by the Maryland Medical Cannabis Commission, and Maryland State Delegate Cheryl Glenn. If you have a comment or a question about this issue, give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Tweet us using the hashtag WHURFM. Thank you all for joining the conversation. I appreciate it.
Glad to be here.
So, Bruce, talk to me a little bit about what is happening from your understanding in Maryland. The medical marijuana issue in the state is newer than it is in other states like Washington State, Colorado, California, and the like. But what's going on from your perspective?
Okay, this is an emerging industry where we all hope to have generational wealth for our children. At the end of the day, Maryland has been disproportionately, our kids have been disproportionately sent to prison. We've all been involved in the criminal justice system for marijuana use. And now that we have an opportunity to make money, billions of dollars, we have been shut out. This last round was supposed to allow for at least four licenses for African Americans, which is only a pittance. We thought we should get more. But still, no one for the growing and processing. And let me put this in perspective for your listening audience. We all see liquor stores on the corner. Liquor stores will be analogous to a dispensary. But at the end of the day, the people who control the industry are the people who supply the dispensaries. And African Americans are not being allowed to pay. And we're saying this is wrong, and we need to do something to change this dynamic in our great state.
Lisa, explain to me what Ellis Industries is and what you are trying to do regarding becoming a supplier, a processor. Give me the cannabis 101 from the business perspective.
Well, I'm a patient advocate as well as trying to become a grower and a processor in the state.
What does that mean? Let me back this up for those who just aren't familiar with it. Obviously, we know what growing means, but more to the point, from a business perspective, what does that mean and as far as processing?
Well, as far as processing, Maryland's industry is set up as a pyramid. Growers, processors, and then dispensaries. Growers will supply marijuana to the processors and processors to the dispensaries. To become a cultivator, the cultivation of it, as we all know, that you're growing indoors, or you have a specific style of growing. Processing is creating products, whether it's edibles, creams, pills, CBD oils. There's a variety of different ways now that you can, patients can actually receive treatment in the state of Maryland in the forms of processing.
Mm-hmm. So what happened with you? Because you applied for a license and you were denied. Talk to me about what happened.
To give a backdrop, the additional licenses were added to made available this round because of the lockout of African Americans in particular, according to disparity studies that was done here in the state of Maryland. The disparity studies proved that African Americans and Native Americans were the most egregiously affected and locked out of the system. So this round was opened up in particularly for Maryland residents, Maryland certified businesses, African American certified businesses, and the employment of those that are living in underserved communities, and that process was extensive. So there were three processes that changed each time. The first application submission was an online submission, May 24th. That process was faulty. The system crashed.
Why do you say that process was faulty?
Well, it was faulty primarily because of the process itself. Applicants were given instructions of how to apply. There was no checks and balances, no way for you to preview your application, and there was no saving component. So the ability to hold the many applicants or applications that was actually received by MCC on May the 24th at 5 p.m., the system crashed starting before 5 p.m. The application process arbitrarily changed from the way that we were trained and taught that this the process would be, were not a reality on the day of application.
So what you're suggesting is that they moved the goalposts. They changed the rules.
Exactly. Then the rule changed a second time. From May the 24th, from May the 28th, I received an email stating that if I could prove I paid my application fee, that I made the application submission on May the 24th, as well as submit a letter to MCC, then I will be able to submit in a totally different format to a Dropbox. That Dropbox application was completed within the 24-hour time frame that they gave me.
But in the end,
that was also pushed out. The format was changed, and I never received the next notification on June the 11th that the process will be open to the general public, not having to prove that you paid previously, that you made submissions previously, et cetera, which changed the game.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We are talking about the medical marijuana license issue in the state of Maryland. Are African Americans being treated differently as they seek these licenses? If you have a comment, if you have a call, give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Glenn, calling from Southeast D.C. Thanks for calling, Glenn. What's on your mind?
Thanks for taking my call, and good evening to you and your guests. You know, I was my son and his little group had filled papers out, and we're trying to get a license also. And I was told by him that his lawyer told him that they had already given out the first of 80-something licenses or whatever it was to people, the people who work in Maryland, in Congress and stuff like that, to their families. And I think if they do background checks on these people, they will find out that a lot of these people have people in powerful places backing them. And even with a gentleman that I know who's a millionaire, and he couldn't get a license. So something is definitely wrong, but they need to do a back check on everybody who they gave a license to. And I believe that it will come up that it's a lot of folks in the Maryland House of Representatives and all that little stuff that gave information to their families, and their families got the licenses.
Okay.
Thank you, and have a nice evening.
Yeah, Glenn, thank you so much. Bruce, what part do you think politics are playing in this process?
That is the great white elephant in the room.
No pun intended.
No pun intended. In the sense that we know that political influence plays a big part in every contract in the state of Maryland, major contract. We know that. People don't say that, but we know that. Nevertheless, this contract situation with the medical cannabis industry was flawed from the very, very beginning. The gentleman was a little inaccurate on the number.
Yeah.
But we do know there was political influence. We have information that people made calls to different people, and they tried to stop that by saying they were going to redact the applications. And Ms. Ellis can speak to that, how we're supposed to redact our applications. But nevertheless, at the end of the day, the same political people or favorites of political people got the licenses, as it is in every other industry. And I think it's morally wrong, and I do believe that unless people shine a light on this, then it's going to continue to happen, and we're going to be left out of billions and billions of dollars.
Now, it's my understanding that the Maryland Legislative Black Caucus is supposed to try to address this issue, and this issue right now, the issuing of the licenses is currently being held up in court because of a temporary restraining order, because of lawsuits and the like from would-be minority licensees. What can you tell me about that?
Well, letting the cat out of the bag, there is a TRO that is going to expire. Tomorrow, the Legislative Black Caucus, the people that we've dealt with, and I'm glad to hear that you have Delegate Glenn.
Yeah, we're still waiting on her to call in, and hopefully we'll hear from her soon, but please continue.
Who has been at the forefront of this fighting and leading the charge down in Annapolis. And I think one of the really ironies of it, the bill that allowed medical cannabis to come to Maryland is named after her mother.
Yeah, she wrote it. Yeah, she wrote that bill. Yeah.
On November 13th, we do know we got a group of national leaders that are going to be coming out protesting. We're asking people out there to join us and the Legislative Black Caucus because America is watching what happens in Maryland. We got 20% African Americans here that vote, 20% that pay taxes, yet we can't own. We can always consume, but we can never own.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We're talking about the medical marijuana business in the state of Maryland. Are African Americans being treated differently as they seek licenses for medical marijuana businesses? Let's go to Brent, calling from Atlanta. Brent, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Thank you. Yeah, well, my first question is, I'm still learning and still sort of reading about this industry. So my first question is to enter into the industry, is there a certain amount of seed money, and do people enter the industry as kind of a family, or is it a small group the way you would maybe buy a team or a franchise or something? That's my question. And my comment is, it seems to be an extremely expensive business to actually gain a license. Is there any type of movement that instead of having small entities own, maybe a larger collective could own a dispensary? Thanks for taking my question.
Thank you so much. Lisa, your thoughts about his question.
You know, across the country, African Americans represent only 4.3% of the industry. In comparison, here in Maryland, we had the third and fourth highest arrests of any across the country of any incidents for marijuana, period. So when you're looking at investment opportunities from a small business perspective, when it was illegal, you had the capacity to grow to in your homes or however they were growing. But now that it's legal, you're not qualified to grow and to operate a processing center, let alone a cultivation center. Entering into the market is a lot of money. It takes a lot. And to raise that type of capital, because it's not legal at the federal level, getting loans or traditional lending is a issue. So in raising your investment portfolio would require maybe some partnering if, the monies don't exist. But here in Maryland, with the MDOT certification being part of the requirement, minority owners' personal net worth cannot reach over $1.7 million. Yet that was factored out of the process in considering for growing and processing licenses. It was said that that's not enough income revenue to show to qualify you.
And at the same time, let me give you one horror story. A lot of people spend a lot of money just to try to get into the growing and processing game. for lack of a better word. He made a great analogy when he talked about a sports team. Some people have spent up to $600,000, $700,000, half a million dollars just to submit a license when you finish and you factor in everything that's involved. At the end of the day, we've shut out. You don't get that money back, Harold. That money is gone, up in smoke. People have invested life savings, 401ks, put together groups. We've had some talented doctors. We've had talented attorneys. We've had talented business people like Ms. Ellis here that could do a great job for their community, but yet they're being shut out of something in their community that's going to make a lot of money.
One of the things that we've had guests here on the program who have discussed the process. I'm not talking about licensing. I'm talking about the financial process, the infrastructure. Medical marijuana facilities to here in the district and even nationwide where there's recreational marijuana or CBD farms where the THC content is considerably lower. Growing that stuff is not easy. It takes a lot.
It takes a lot.
It takes a whole lot, and it does take a lot of a knowledge as well.
You know, it does. I mean, everything from the lighting to your water to the climate. Security, labeling, there's a whole gamut that requires a lot of money to invest. Our team was 100% African American and Native American with an African American or minority funder that actually made up our entire team. And to find that type of capitalization to carry it out and still be denied, not only was that heart-wrenching, but it's not fair. Because literally it goes against what the initial intent of the legislation and the additional licenses were for.
I need to take a break, but when we come back, more of this conversation about medical marijuana in Maryland. Are African Americans being treated differently as they seek licenses? 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Please stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM, Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Jeff Brown is next with the original Quiet Storm on WHUR. This conversation continues on Sirius XM, Channel 141 in just a few moments. Give us a call, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Your calls are next.
The Howard University Radio Network is WHUR 96.3 FM, WHUR World 96.3 HD2, student-run WHBC HD3, GlassHouseRadio.com, SiriusXM Channel 142, HBCU and SiriusXM Channel 141, HUR Voices, Washington.
Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Tonight, we are asking, are African Americans being treated differently as they seek licenses for medical marijuana businesses in Maryland? My guests are Bruce Branch, who's a spokesperson for the African American Cannabis Association, and Lisa Ellis, CEO of Ellis Industries. Now, her application for a license was recently denied by the Maryland Medical Cannabis Commission. If you have a comment or a question, give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Let me go back to the phone lines. June calling from Bowie. June, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Yes, thank you so much for the opportunity to talk. I think the two guests that you have eloquently stated some of the challenges that we have in Maryland. Collectively, the minorities in Maryland have lost significant amount of money during this application. Our team was actually the team that put in the lawsuit that had the temporary restraining order to stop the process. What I'm looking forward to right now is for us to discuss how we can fix the problem, how we can get more minorities, more African Americans specifically, into the program. Our team have come up with certain type of demands, such as at least trying to get 4 or 5 licenses. I think the whole process needs to be halted in terms of having reevaluation of scored of the current people who submitted on May the 24th, have their application rescored, and also have subject matter experts to actually score the application as opposed to teams of people that don't have specific experts in the specific subject that they're trying to score. Right now, as you all have stated, many of us have suffered under the quote-unquote drug wars. One of my siblings was one of the people that was targeted. So I'm hoping that, Ms. Ellis, what do you think the solution is in Maryland at this point to resolve what is going on? Do you have any remedies you can provide?
The solution right now is for the people to band together, African Americans in particular, and protest and demand that the licenses do not be distributed. The current state moves into a continuing fight to ensure that African Americans are included at the table. But we also, I think part of the solution would be to take it out of the hands of the state, put it into the county's hand, look at the 15% extra points that was to give us that supposed to have put African American applications over the edge and helping to give us additional points to win was not valid, was not counted. So we need to demand that Maryland residency is factored in, that African American status and MDOT Maryland certified business, that these are counted into the process and they need to be demanded. We also need to demand of our state legislators to put the additional licenses, meaning 4 is not enough for what we have gone through in the state of Maryland. We need to demand more. 4 licenses that literally came on our backs. We had to negotiate from 7 down to 4. So they satisfied lawsuits with 3 companies to make this happen. This is not enough. We need to add additional licenses to each county, maybe 4. Stop the process and start over.
And to that point, because during the first round, weren't there supposed to be set-asides for minority organizations that were seeking licenses, whether they were processing or distribution?
Yes. When the legislation was created, initially minority inclusion at an equity level was the main goal, yet all 15 original licenses were awarded to white companies that had political influence or law enforcement. And major lobbyists were the ones that was driving that. The lawsuits that came against the state because of that consequently were one of the main reasons that the additional licenses were targeted for African Americans or minority groups, period. Yet it's still, here we are, no award has been made. Major companies from outside of Maryland have come in, companies to actually win these licenses. And the whole point of us fighting has actually been non-void.
June, thank you so much for sharing with us. I appreciate your phone call. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We now have Maryland State Delegate Cheryl Glenn on the line. Delegate Glenn, thanks for joining the conversation.
Thank you for having me.
Can you give me, from your perspective, an understanding of what you believe is going on as it relates to African-American applicants for processing or growing licenses by the that would be issued by the Maryland Medical or Cannabis Commission?
Well, the issue is that African Americans are being blocked out of the process. There seems to be difficulty with getting access for ownership for African Americans for growing and processing licenses in the state of Maryland. There's a lot going on with this industry. This is a multi-trillion dollar industry nationally, and nationally less than 1% of all the licenses held are held by African Americans. And that's shameless when you consider that African Americans have been more disproportionately impacted in a negative way by marijuana laws than any other ethnic group. So, you know, we are committed, the Legislative Black Caucus in the state of Maryland is committed to fighting for, you know, equity and fairness for 1/3 of our population in the state of Maryland, which is African-American, to be able to gain ownership in this industry, and that's why we fought for House Bill 2, that we could create new licenses that would be targeted for minorities with an emphasis on African Americans and Native American Indians. That's why we had the governor do the disparity study, because that was needed in order to justify giving additional points for African Americans and Native American Indians. But money being what it is, we know that these big companies, these big conglomerates like Anheuser-Busch and Acreage Holdings, the hedge fund company based in Canada, you know, really made a concentrated effort to find African-Americans or other minorities who they could pay to be a front, a false front, to say that they owned that particular company that was applying for the licenses. We know the games that are played. There are people who go around the country nationally who are paid to evaluate and score the applications, knowing who they want to give licenses to. This is a big issue, and we need the attorney governor to help.
You mean the attorney general?
Brian Frosch.
Yes, the attorney. You said attorney governor, but please go ahead. The attorney general.
Attorney general, mm-hmm. Yes. We try to have a Maryland state preference for the licenses, and we were told that we couldn't do that in spite of the fact that other states are doing the same thing. Missouri just did it. Oklahoma has a strong state preference. Arkansas, Maine, you know, so this is an unbelievable fight. And let me tell you, if it weren't for the Black Caucus, it wouldn't even be a fight. It would be business as usual.
Can you pardon the interruption, what is the plan for the Legislative Black Caucus? I believe it's on tomorrow. Is there a hearing? Is there a meeting? What's
tomorrow? There's a meeting. We promised the group that we met with about 2 weeks ago. We were asked to meet with a group of minority cannabis company owners who were not, who basically were rejected. And so we met with them so that we could have an understanding. When I say we, I mean Delegate Daryl Barnes, who is the chair of the Legislative Black Caucus of Maryland, and I'm the chair emeritus. We met with the group in Prince George's County so that we could gain a technical understanding of the issues that they had, because we actually didn't apply, so we didn't know what people actually went through, you know, in terms of the application process. We gained a lot of information. We did a very detailed letter to the Attorney General and to the Commission. We've met with the Commission. We met with the Attorney General. We are waiting their decisions on specific requests we have made. We have made some very specific requests, up to and including a rescoring of applications, because we feel strongly that there's evidence that the process was compromised.
So when do you expect to hear from the Attorney General? And have you approached Governor Hogan about this?
No, we have not approached Governor Hogan yet. We had to start with the Attorney General. We had to start with the Commission. So we're going through the necessary steps, because if we went straight to the governor, the first thing the governor would ask is, well, have you met with the commission? Have you met with the attorney general? What has their response been? And so we want to go through all of the necessary steps in order to determine, you know, our best course of action. We're meeting tomorrow at 3 p.m. in Annapolis in the House Office Building in rooms 170 and 180 with the groups that are owned by African Americans and anybody else who wants to come. This is a public meeting. And let me say this: it is unconscionable that no Black-owned company in the state of Maryland, that neither myself or Delegate Barnes, none of the companies that we are aware of, and we've met with hundreds of companies, no one from Maryland was giving a positive letter from the commission. saying that you are a top-tier candidate, you know, top-tier applicant. None of them. And, you know, as I said to the Attorney General, don't you find that to be absolutely incredible?
And what was his response? What was his response?
Well, you know, they, well, we didn't actually meet with Brian Forrest. We met with his representative who has worked with us through the whole legislation and regulation process.
Okay.
If Brian Forrest met with us, he would be at a loss as to what has occurred up to date. But this person is one of his deputies.
I need to go to the line, Delegate. Hold on one moment because I need to take a, phone call. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Brooks calling from Maryland. Brooks, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
One of my questions was already answered. But the other question I wanted to know about was concerning possession and use in Maryland. What is the law concerning that?
That's an excellent question. Delegate Glenn?
Well, we have decreased the penalties for possession. Marijuana is now, possession of marijuana in a small quantity is no longer a felony offense, it's a misdemeanor. I can't quote you what the exact quantity is. I'm not at my computer, but for a small nickel bag, you know, so to speak.
It's been a long time, Bill.
That's what I heard.
She is from Baltimore.
You know, Lisa. Like the kids say, I'm just saying. Okay. But anyway.
But there's something Mosby.
And then the state's attorney, Marlon Mosby, in Baltimore City, is no longer even prosecuting marijuana offenses unless it's evident that you have marijuana for the specific intent of selling it. You know, as a distributor. And so, you know, we've passed a lot of good laws in the state of Maryland that has decreased, you know, the penalties. And I know that a lot of people want to see Maryland move to recreational, but we're not there yet. And I will tell you, as long as blacks are locked out of this process and are not allowed to have ownership, there's no way I would support recreational, because you'd have the same people owning the licenses, you know, and not black folks.
Well, it seems, in one sense, that as it relates to African Americans in this process, they've gone from getting locked up to getting locked out.
And they're still getting locked
up. Absolutely. Absolutely. That's incredible. Mm-hmm. And that's not acceptable. And I will tell you, if everybody feels like I feel, this is a fight. This is a fight to the finish. And, you know, people have heard me saying, as long as I have breath in my body, I will fight for fairness and equity for black folk, particularly in this industry. And the commission is named after my mother.
Yes.
I started this whole endeavor because of my mother's illness and learning the benefits of medical cannabis.
Well, Delegate Glenn, if I may, I've got another listener who has a question for you. Can you give me 5 more minutes of your time, please?
Sure.
Okay, thank you so much. I want to I certainly want to thank Brooks for his phone call. Janet calling from Baltimore. Janet, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi, Delegate Glenn. I've spoken with you before, and I just wanted to let them know. I think that the whole thing is somebody is always undercutting you and just playing their own game. One man that was on earlier made a good point that when you call these radio shows and you win a prize, if you're a relative or somebody who works for the station, you can't win the contest. So for them to be handing these things out to their friends and family, I think Governor Hogan could have put a stop to it 4 years ago. He didn't.
Yes, he could.
I don't think he's going to put a stop to it now. And it is just sad because I know how hard you have worked.
Yes, thank you. And, you know, if we can prove that someone has, you know, given a positive opportunity to a relative. You know, there are a lot of rumors, but, you know, I told folks, don't tell me about a rumor unless you're willing to name a name. Because, see, I'm not afraid to name names, you know, and I know that there's a rumor out there, but that's been unsubstantiated. You know, we can't substantiate it. We can't find out, well, what's the person's name? What team are they a member of?
But let me, Delegate Gwynn, let me just ask the simple layman's question. Whether we're talking about an old boys club or old girls club, yes, for that matter, why not just say, okay, if they're going to be 15 licenses, why not just say that five of them, one third, will be set aside? That is not.
It's illegal.
That's what they're telling
you. We have been informed over and over that you cannot do set asides for licenses. You can have set asides for contracts. You know, we have a strong MBE law in the state of Maryland, but it's illegal to set aside licenses. And that's something that we have to fix.
Mm-hmm.
At the federal government. A lot has to be fixed at the federal government level, but it's illegal. We cannot pass a law that won't hold up to judicial review, and we have not been able to do that.
Mm.
I would love
other
to
states
do that.
Are doing it. California it has an simple equity program as well as a lottery. And so other states are doing it, but Maryland still has an issue with it. California's equity program, makes it possible, or was established to make it possible for the inclusions of minority. They also have a lottery, and there's no cap on the number of licenses, and they're still going through shaping the industry. Yet here in Maryland, that doesn't seem to be the true intent to really want the inclusion of African Americans.
If you can point to me, what other states have done that has resulted in ownership. I don't mean, 51% false faith. I mean real ownership and control of a company, because I that's hard to find in the United States, where you have true black owned companies for growing and processing.
And we're not talking about distribution. We are talking about growing and processing,
absolutely,
which is significantly different than the distribution. Yeah.
Well, growing and processing is where the big money is.
Yes, exactly.
That's the money. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Delegate Cheryl Gwynn, I want to thank you so much for spending some time with us. I know that we've got to let you go, but I appreciate it, and we will continue to watch this process, and we will certainly stay in touch. So, again, thank you so much.
And the meeting is open tomorrow.
Very well. That's right.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me. Have a good evening.
I want to ask both of you, because one of the things that I think is so critical to this conversation, not just for the state of Maryland, but this is part of the national conversation as it relates to black entrepreneurs. This is an industry that is still so extremely new for black entrepreneurs. And Bruce, you can probably speak to addressing the stigma for some black communities that are still wondering what this really means.
Yeah, I think at the end of the day, when we think about it, what are we saying to our children? That we, just like the MGM casino, we can only consume, we can never own. In our communities, we have people that don't look like us who take the money out of our communities. We were promised 40 acres and a mule a while back. They promised us 5 licenses. Neither promise came true. At the Harold, I just think this is going to be a moral issue, more, and this is our next great civil rights fight. And I say that because wherever I go, I smell marijuana. Just about. I mean, nobody wants to admit it. I've had this conversation with several brethren in the church, and they say, oh, we can't talk about marijuana. But your members smoke it. Some of the pastors smoke it.
And you're talking about recreational.
I'm just talking about recreational.
Yeah.
So how do we get it legally into the hands of the people who need it? And when you see a little baby who's been sick and has epilepsy or a Down syndrome, and they smoke and they become better, you want to do something to help. You want to be
babies
able,
are not smoking. You mean there's other forms?
Yeah. No, they're not smoking. Yes. I mean, okay, babies, I'm sorry. The candies. I'm sorry.
Well, you're essentially when we're again. Let's move the recreational marijuana piece out because again, Maryland is just not there yet.
No,
obviously we're struggling with this.
But the medicinal.
This is why I'm asking. Because, as you said, we need to medical marijuana in the state of Maryland is legal, even though this process is moving at a snail's pace. It is flawed.
Yes,
for not just African Americans, but just the process, just in general. It's a work in progress.
It's an embarrassment, Harold.
Yeah, but here's my point. For black entrepreneurs like the Lisa Ellis's of the world, what could this very well mean for you as a businesswoman, as an entrepreneur, and by extension, someone whose profile, if you were to get a license, if you were to be successful, your status in the community as a contributor to the African American community, what does all of that mean for you if this were to happen for you?
If this was to happen, it closed the wealth gap. One, I'm a patient. I was injured in a car accident 5 years ago and was given opioids that literally just took me out of the capacity to run a business, let alone hire people that look like me. So as a patient, here's a better product that not only helped me to come back to life, to re-enter the workforce, but to also look at the opportunity to hire people that look like me. I'm not hiring white lobbyists, white attorneys, and white public relations firm. We're talking about increasing the economic conditions in communities like Baltimore, who started out with 21% opioid. It's now is up 85% usage on opioids in African Americans, which the numbers are significantly different for whites. And we can change that by allowing us to enter the market, to compete, and to be able to help our own communities. We can invest in our own. We would change the housing market because we'll have capital to put affordable housing, to put a better product industry, because we'll have the money to do that. It's a game changer.
And for you, this isn't just medical marijuana with the active ingredient of THC. Does this also mean your entrance into the CBD market?
Absolutely. You know, as we're testing the market to see what products work, cancer patients, people that have Parkinson's, individuals with mental health issues, we see that creams, CBD, drinks, bath tonics, teas. These are different methods that are used that we're just beginning to introduce them to patients that are looking for an alternative to opioids. It is critical to our health and well-being, and it's also critical to our economic growth.
Outside of this conversation on this program, Bruce, how do you educate the broader public that is still having questions about this business, or even to the point where they just don't know about it because it is still very, very new?
Through outreach. Mm-hmm. I believe we're going to have to continue to do our outreach. We have some very dynamic spokesmen on this. Snoop Dogg is really, really involved in the industry in a big way as an entrepreneur. And the other thing is, Harold, that we forgot to mention is we want to create jobs. We can create jobs through this process, but in the state of Maryland, if you've been convicted, you can't even work inside of the processing plant. Mm-hmm. So what we want to do is to begin to keep advocating, put the people in office who can make a difference, who have the courage to stand up and fight. And more than that, will change the laws so that we can get a fair opportunity. We're not at, these entrepreneurs aren't asking anyone to give them anything. They just want a seat at the table so they can play at the table.
The 15% that they have right now that was put into the processing, well, legislation that's supposed to give us a competitive edge is not enough. It's an insult when you look at the how affected, negatively we've been affected as a community. 15% is not enough. We need 30% and higher. So the scoring process, how what is the true intent? The true intent need to exist in policy. It need to exist with the support of legislators, and it needs to exist in our own counties opposed to the state level, who has failed twice. And do we need a third time? Three strikes, you're out.
When do you hope to hear something from this process right now? Delegate Glenn was not quite sure, maybe in a month, maybe more.
Well, you know.
She said it best. She said we're going to fight to the end.
Exactly.
And we've, and no matter what issue that we've been involved with, we fight to the end because it's that important for our children. It's that important for the business, black African-American business community. We got to fight to the end. If that means social protest, then there'll be a social protest. If that means changing the ballots at the ballot box, then we need to do that as well. But we got to fight for the end. Everybody has to join together in the black community to make a difference in the black community.
And the Rolling Stones put it in an article just last month when they were looking at marijuana in black and white in comparison. This is a fight, a national fight that we have to unite, not just here in Maryland, but across the country, because we are constantly being locked out. This is prohibition all over again. And why?
Yeah. I think that's a good place to end this conversation. Bruce Branch, Lisa Ellis, and we also want to thank Maryland State Delegate Cheryl Glenn for participating in this conversation. Thank you all so much.
Thank you for having us.
That is the Daily Drum on Sirius XM, Channel 141 for this Monday, October 21st. I'm Harold Fisher. Now, stay tuned for The Connection. Good night.